Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 20, The Structure of the Universe, Text Number 38. Translation: learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions, and propensities to cheat have thus described the planetary systems and their particular symptoms, measurements, and locations. With great deliberation, they have established the truth that the distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Lokaloka is 1/4 of the diameter of the universe, or in other words, 125 million yojanas, or 1 billion miles. Purport. Srila Viswanatha Chakravarti Thakur has given an accurate astronomical information about the location of the Lokaloka mountain, the movements of the sun globe, and the distance between the sun and the circumference of the universe. However, the technical terms used in astronomical calculations given by the Jyotirveda are difficult to translate into English. Therefore, to satisfy the reader, we may include the exact Sanskrit statement given by Srila Viswanatha Chakravarti Thakur, which records exact calculations regarding the universal affairs. And that is followed by a long paragraph of Sanskrit words. Omagananta manandasa gananjana shalaka chakshin militam inatasmai shigarave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Ina Bhutale Swayam Upakatamayam Dadati Swapatalikam. It's too loud. Anyway. He wants me to keep it closer, but... Oh, for the kitchen. Can they turn it up in the kitchen or turn it down here? It's the same volume everywhere. Okay, Hare Krishna in the kitchen. Learned scholars who are free from the mistakes, illusions, and propensities to cheat. Where are such people to be found today? These are wanted because of this material world. There's, practically speaking, this is what scholars want, so-called scholars. They make mistakes, they are an illusion, and they certainly have a propensity to cheat. We discover that periodically, how scholars cheat on their research in order to give in order to get some name, fame, some position, something like this. And of course, what to speak of global warming, which is a very dubious concept. Everyone, there's a cheating propensity today. But the scholars referred to here are the Bhagavats, pure devotees, who are very concerned to maintain the transmission of spiritual knowledge as it is. Because without doing that, then it loses all of its potency. And becomes watered down, becomes lost, and consequently, nobody can make any advancement. However, we're in the age of Kali Yuga, and that cheating propensity has become very great. We have had the occasion to review the history of the Christian church, the Roman church. And their literature has been redacted time and time and time and time again so that nobody can actually understand what is what. Fact of the matter is that Jesus and his followers, they were Vaishnavas. And when I say Vaishnava, I mean they were Vaishnavas like us. They followed four Gautama principles. They had a conception of a masculine and feminine conception of deity. They had a conception or understanding of a Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. See, Sri Radha Gopinath ki? What else? They would not eat food cooked by non-devotees. They would not associate or even touch non-devotees. They would, of course, glorify the names of the Lord. They even wore tilak. What else? There's about 15 things. Oh, yeah, their bathing, their cleanliness was basically the same as ours. So if we simply describe these people and ask you, who are they, you would normally say, well, these are Hare Krishna devotees. So then the question comes, well, what happened? If Jesus and his followers were like that, then what happened to Christianity? Because it certainly doesn't look like that today. Now, how do we know this? There's been, of course, a lot of propaganda made, a lot of indoctrination about the so-called history of the church, but about 60-some years ago, in 1948 or 47, in a Egyptian area called Nag Hammadi, there were some scrolls that were found in a jar that were buried there 2,000 years ago. These are called the Nag Hammadi texts. And then just a few years, a year later, 1948, in the desert area surrounding the Dead Sea, in caves there, there were also some scrolls that were found, again, put there from 2,000 years ago. And these were materials that were written by the people who were contemporaries of Jesus. The Nag Hammadi texts, they were able to, let's say, find their way into academia at the time. But the Dead Sea Scrolls, they were held in abeyance for almost 40 years. And it was only through the actions of some people in California that they were able finally to get them made available to the public. And why did they try to keep them from the public? Because they give a very different understanding of what Jesus and his followers were like. Oh yeah, did I say they were vegetarian? Yeah, they followed very good principles, yeah. Then this begs the question, well, what happened? Because what we see as Christianity today certainly does not look like anything like Vaishnavism. So what happened? We must understand that the world is being run by demons, non-devotees, those who are envious of God, rakshasas. And at that time, of course, the entire history of the Western world is a history of this rakshasa control. Because we see their inclination is to be warlike, to attack and destroy other cultures. So at the time, it was the Romans who were the powers, the dominant power in the world. And they were occupying Judea, and the followers of Jesus, they were very unhappy about this. It was not simply some 12 disciples in a small sect at all. Actually, there was a great number of people there. And so much so that they were actually able to put on from time to time various insurrections, to have fights and skirmishes to attack the Romans. They were xenophobic. They didn't want the Romans to be there. They wanted to get them out so that they could actually establish, follow the principles of religion. Jesus and his followers, they were not, they did not go out preaching. They simply wanted to be good Jews. Now, what is a Jew? The Roman historian Josephus is asked this, and the records of Josephus are still extant. They exist, and in his writings, Josephus, he explains that what is a Jew? A Jew is a very amazing thing. But if you actually want to understand something fully, you must understand its origin. The Jews are derived from the Indian philosophers. So we understand that Bharatvarsha went from, covered the whole world at one time. But even specifically, Josephus, he records that the so-called Garden of Eden, that land of paradise that we hear about in the Bible, this extended from the Nile River on one side to the Ganga on the other side. In other words, this was all Bharatvarsha. And why was it the Garden of Eden? Because they were following the principles of religion. So the Romans, they made an effort to co-opt the Jews of the time, and they were successful with a segment of them. Some of them were in control of the temple, of the mount. They had compromised with the Roman occupation, and so they were what you might call then the establishment Jews. They had compromised their principles, and the others were, let's say, quite unhappy with them. So there was these various factions that were going on among the Jews. Anyway, the Jews, they wanted simply to follow their teachings. They wanted to, first of all, understand what they were. They were very convinced that their teachings, the Torah, had been falsified as much as 1,000 years earlier. And it was the role of Jesus, actually, to yada yada hi dharma shaglani bhavati bharata, to cross out the false principles of religion that were put there in their scripture, and to, again, reestablish the principles of religion as they should be. So there was this tension between Jesus and his followers and the Romans. And, of course, the Romans tolerated as much as they could. Then they finally put Jesus on the cross. Now, hanging on the cross is reserved for political crimes. It's not about what the Bible says, whatever the so-called reasons were for putting Jesus on the cross. But actually, Jesus was seen as a political enemy of the state, and therefore he was crucified. About 7 years after that, now, did he die on the cross? There's a lot of evidence that he did not. In fact, when I was in Vancouver, there was one Indian fellow, or Pakistani, I guess, who was living in the area of Kashmir, and he told me that he used to walk back and forth on his way to school, back and forth. He would walk by the tomb of Jesus every day. You can go to the tombofjesus.com, I believe. There's different photos of that and so on. It used to be open to the public, but more recently, since it's become more well-known, they've closed it. In any case, Jesus was out of the scene after that. And then his brother, James, actually became the head of the church. We don't hear so much about James, but there's much more information about James than there is about Jesus. In fact, one of the scholars who's responsible for getting the Dead Sea Scrolls released to the public, Robert Eisenman, he wrote a book called James, Brother of Jesus. Very big, 1,000-page book, and he gives a lot of evidence about that. He says, we don't know about Jesus, but we know about James, so we can understand, because they were close and because they were both leaders of the church, that whatever James was, Jesus was also. So by inference, we can understand what was Jesus. Seven years after Jesus was crucified, there was a personality by the name of Saul who was very active in persecuting the Christians. Let's call them Jewish Christians, because they weren't any Christians at that time. Saul, he finally decided that he would, instead of trying to simply attack the Christians, he would go inside, he would infiltrate them, and then from within try to destroy it. So he feigned a revelation. He saw the risen Jesus And Jesus was saying to them, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Maybe you know this line. Very famous. And Saul fell off his horse and beheld Jesus, and he said, okay, I'm converted. So he went then to the Jewish Christians, to James, and he said, I want to become an acolyte. I've seen the risen Christ. Of course, nobody else could see it besides him, but nonetheless, he was putting on a pretty good show. Some of them wanted to kill him. The others, anyway, they had some debate, and maybe they figured it's better to have an enemy inside the camp. So they allowed him to enter into their training. He was an acolyte for 3 years, and then after he graduated, or he was baptized, he was given the name then Paul. So after Paul was and finished his training, he went out to preach. Now this was something unusual because, like we said earlier, the Jews, they weren't going out and preaching and trying to convert anybody. But this was Paul's program. He was going out and trying to convert people to what? To follow Jesus. Everything that he was saying was apasadanta as far as James and the other Jews were concerned. So they brought him back and they tried to chastise him and correct him. Couldn't fix him up. He wouldn't get with the program. So finally they sent him off to Greece. And in Greece is the first place where we finally hear the word Christianity. So it was Paul who actually created this religion centered around Jesus. And based on what? Based on faith alone. You don't have to do anything. You simply believe, and then you are saved. The Prabhupada criticized this idea very severely, that people want to wipe their feet on Jesus, commit all kinds of sins, and simply say, I believe, and that's enough. No sinful reaction. Of course, this is the bogus philosophy. The Jews, James and the others, Jesus, their teaching was to follow the law. And they described it like that, to follow the law. Same thing that we find in Mahabharata, the law, capital L, the principles of religion. And so this idea that you don't have to follow the law, that simply by grace you are saved, was just like over the top. So they brought him back again to chastise him. There are a number of them at that time. They wanted to kill him. And Paul got wind of that. And so he became saved by the Roman army. That's a very curious thing, because the Roman army generally didn't interfere with the affairs of the Jews. If they wanted to kill one of their own kind, no problem. But Paul said that he wanted to appeal his case to the emperor. Now, any Roman citizen had the option of appealing any of their crimes or their punishment to the emperor at that time. But Paul was not being convicted of any crime against the state. Nonetheless, he used this as an excuse to go to Rome. And then it's from Rome that we see the various books of the Bible developed. Simon? What are the books of the Bible, the four books? Mark, Luke? Oh yeah, it was Luke. So this Luke, this is actually a friend of Paul's. He was a physician. None of these Gospels are actually written by the apostles of Jesus. And these works, these books are written approximately in the after the 70s AD, so about 40 years after Jesus was on the scene. And none of them were written by the apostles. Finally it came to the point where the friction became too much, and the Romans decided to annihilate the Jewish Christians, so they began the 7-year war, or the Jewish war. Lasted 7 years. They were so great in number, it took the Roman army 7 years to finally destroy them. And then that wasn't even enough. Of course, they tried to destroy all the literature, and then they had another crusade to find out the remnants of them. They called it the I don't know if I can say this right. Maybe somebody who speaks French knows. Albigensian Crusade? Huh? Albigensian Crusade? Something like this. This was, if I remember right, approximately 700 of years later. And one of their tests to find out who was actually a, let's say, who was a person to be... eliminated was to force them to eat meat. Anybody who would not eat meat, they understood that was a guilty sentence. And so they tried to destroy any last trace of what was the eternal religion that appeared in Palestine at that time, 2,000 years ago. So, well, we got on to that. It wasn't what I planned to talk about today, but we went down that road. Now, we were talking about the scholars who are free from mistakes, and we were talking about how they had changed the scripture. So, actually, the Christian scriptures, like I said, these were not written by the followers of Jesus. These were written by other persons. And then, of course, Rome became the head of the church, right? The place that was the headquarters of the establishment, of the demonic establishment of that time, became the headquarters of the Roman Church, which is a very strange thing. Now, last year, a very interesting book came out called Caesar's Messiah. And the author of this book, he studied the New Testament for a long time, and his thesis in this book is that the New Testament is a complete fiction, that it was created by the Roman establishment for the purpose of bringing the Jews or the people of that time to get them to follow the status quo. The status quo means just live the way we want you to live, right? It'd be get along with the occupying powers, just follow the program, and so on like that. So they created the New Testament like that. He gives many very interesting arguments. You can find him in some of his interviews on YouTube, of course. Then they changed all the books. At that time, of course, the Romans, they would co-opt practically any area where they conquered. They, of course, were going around conquering all the different people. But rather than force them to change their religion, what they did was they allowed people to continue to follow their religion, but they required them to put an image of the Caesar in their temple. A Caesar should be worshipped also. He is considered an incarnation of God. So the Jews, they refused to do that. But others did. In any case, the Romans, they would basically co-opt every... all of these different groups. So it took them several hundred years to get it together to where they could coalesce or to establish their own doctrines, which was finally more or less finished in at the Council of Nicaea in about 300 AD, where they, at that time, eliminated such doctrines as reincarnation and other kinds of spiritual truths that are part of the eternal religion. So why did we go there? I wanted to give you some understanding of what the nature of this world is, what's going on here. This world is being run by demonic powers, and they run everything from behind the scenes. Right? They don't make waves if they don't have to, because why? It's easier to control somebody who doesn't think they're being controlled. So as long as we think that we're free, they let us go on with that illusion. But if we begin to challenge, if anybody begins to challenge the power structure, then they step in and they take some action. Just like we have a recent example, this Mr. Snowden, who revealed all the secrets of the NSA, the National, now what they're calling the National Stasi Association, National Stasi Agency, not the National Security Agency. Stasis, you know, were the secret police of Germany during the Third Reich. In any case, it's become a big controversy, and there's many, many people who want to see this man put away forever, just like they're doing with that other brave soldier. What was his name? Private Manning, who revealed what was going on in Iraq. The point is, if we go up against the establishment, that they take steps to put everything in line. Did I tell you about my experience in Pridnestrovia? Yeah, let me tell you that. You may not remember. Pridnestrovia is a little republic in Moldova. And so from Odessa, just across the border, just nearby Odessa in Ukraine. So the devotees are active there. Now, Pridnestrovia, when the Soviet Union fell, the Republic of Pridnestrovia, they took a vote whether they were going to stay aligned with the Soviet Union or become aligned with, whether they're going to go with Moldova in the West. Well, this republic, they decided that they wanted to stay with Russia. And, of course, the mother country didn't like that, Moldova, so there was a small war there. There happened to be a Russian general there with his troops, and so they were able to prevail. And Pridnestrovia now is a independent place that doesn't exist on the map. If you go there, they don't stamp your passport. Somewhere or other, they're not allowed to have a stamp, however that works. In any case, we went over there about maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And the devotees had become a small place. They got to know the person who was the head of their intelligence services, a fellow that was trained by the KGB. And he had a school for revolutionaries there. And that school, their icon was Che Guevara. They invited me to speak, so I talked about how to have a spiritual revolution. In any case, when I visited there, the temple president brought him over, and then I had the opportunity to speak to him. And I was telling him about what we were attempting to do to create a village community that followed the principles of spiritual economics, a gift economy, based on devotional service. So he's listening very intently, and then after I finished, the first thing that he said to me was, "How are you going to protect yourself?"
From what?
He said, "The powers that be are not going to like what you're doing. They're first going to try to infiltrate you from within and destroy you from within. Right? If they fail at that, they'll make a lot of propaganda about you in the area and try to destroy you that way. And failing that, they will come and destroy you physically." And when he said that, I was remembering the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, that were eliminated by the United States government in 1994. Shishirada Gopinaki. Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. It was in 1992 or 1994. One little cult sect, Christian sect, the United States government just came and attacked and burned them to the ground. And whoever survived put them in prison. So, in any case, the point is that there's demons who control this world, and they have a particular purpose. Their purpose is that they are the enjoyer, and everybody's purpose is to serve them. And if you think you have some other purpose, no, forget it. And what do they want you to do? They want everybody simply to follow the status quo. They don't care what you believe as long as you live the way they want you to live. Why? Because the way they've established to live is in which everybody is basically worshiping them, right? Worship means to give your time and your energy, your focus to something. So they've set up corporations in which they own the shares, all the profit of the corporation. The purpose, right? The stated purpose of the corporation is to maximize profit. If you have a for-profit corporation, there's no other purpose, simply to maximize profit. So so people are going to work, they're doing their duty, they're trying to have their careers or whatnot, but the result of all that is that all their energy is actually being given indirectly to these powers that be. So believe whatever you want, you just follow the system that we've established. However, Krishna and Mahaprabhu, they have a different idea. To again establish a spiritual culture on this planet. We, of course, speak a lot about going back to Godhead, going that direction, but we don't speak so much about bringing the spiritual world here. And this is actually what Prabhupada had in mind. He wanted to establish in this so-called material world, again, the kingdom of God, where everyone would follow the principles of religion and be happy, and at the end of life, go back to Godhead. So this is a serious challenge to the powers that be. A very serious challenge. And, of course, they have their ways of trying to keep things in line. Niranjan Swami has two disciples who were sent by the intelligence services in Ukraine to infiltrate the movement. And after they came in contact with the devotees, they blooped from the KGB. And or maybe they did, maybe they didn't, who knows. In any case, those kinds of things are going on. But the Krishna, his will can never be thwarted. And what Krishna Mahaprabhu's desire is that this love of God will flood the world and take everybody, carry everybody away with it. We saw the tsunami in, what's it called? Fukushima. How it came and just swept everything away. You can't resist a flood like that. So Lord Chaitanya intends to flood the world with the love of God, to sweep everyone away like that. And so it's going to happen. How? How is it going to happen? But just as a blade of grass or a tree can get started in a crack in a sidewalk or a crack in the road or something and then grow and become, just push up the cement and everything, This force of this movement is irresistible. It will go on and it will conquer them. But, of course, very challenging to understand how, because it certainly seems that they are all powerful. In fact, they think themselves so powerful now that there's so many people that are openly speaking about the nature of the world today. They don't care. They let them speak. And they just go on. So they think they have the whole thing sewn up. The question is, what will we do? How do we bring that culture of the spiritual world here? What is that culture? It's a culture of love. It's a culture of happiness. Here we see it on the altar. Krishna and Radha, the gopis. This is the culture. That culture is centered around Krishna to give him pleasure. In this material world, we try to take the place of Krishna in those relationships. Krishna wants to have pure relationships. He wants to have relationships with seniors, Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj. He wants to have relationships with his girlfriends. So that's the culture that we want to bring here, with Krishna at the center. We've tried to, in Maya, under the influence of Maya, we try to take the place of Krishna in these types of relationships. We want to be the center. Doesn't matter whether we're male or female. We want to be the Purusha. And we want to enjoy these relationships in a perverted way. So this Krishna consciousness movement is actually meant to establish these proper relationships. In Goloka Vrindavan, what are they doing? It's a cowherd village. You have to have something to do. So this taking care of the cows and so on provides a context for the relationships to develop. The important thing is the relationships between everybody. The settings not so significant, but that's the setting that Krishna likes. So we want to also establish those kinds of relationships, those same kind of loving relationships that are going on in the spiritual world with Krishna at the center. Those are the kind of relationships that we want to also establish. And this, what we have here, this temple or any of our temples, this provides the context in which we do that. You have to have something to do. So there's so many different kinds of activities everybody's engaged in. That's not the important thing. The important thing is, what are the relationships? How do we relate to each other? How do we keep Krishna in the center in our relationships? How do we see everything in relationship to Krishna? To establish that spiritual culture here on this planet. So that's our objective. That's what we want to accomplish. And every one of us has a role in doing that. And we should think about that role. We should think about what will I do? How will I contribute to that? We should look at our relationships with each other in that light. How do we manifest this wonderful spiritual culture here that's so attractive and so wonderful that immediately, as soon as anybody comes in contact with it, they're going to say, I want to be there. I want to join those people. That's our job. So, let's try to keep that in mind. To think about not just going back to Godhead, but bringing the spiritual world here and manifesting it. When we say the Prema Dhanvi prayers, Jayom Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya, and so on. What are these? We're glorifying the manifestation of aspects of the spiritual world here in the material world. And that's why we say Jai. Because the spiritual energy is coming here into this dark, dense age of Kali, enlightening the place, enlivening the place. So it's coming little by little. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Srimaya Purnavadeep Dham Ki Jai, Dimunami Ki Jai, Gangamai Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Like this. So these are aspects of the spiritual world that are manifesting here. We want to manifest more. We want to manifest the entire culture. So that means cows. We have to have cows. Krishna, he loves cows. But the very important thing about cows is that they force us to come to Sattva-gun. The cow, the bull, they will not go to Rajagun. Balabhadra Prabhu, he relates how he, when he was learning from Paramananda how to work with the oxen, he was trying to get them to go fast, speed up like a horse, giddy up. And Paramananda told him, don't waste your time. He said, they're not going to do it. They have their speed and you adjust yourself to them. They're in sattva, and you have to come to sattva to work with them. Whether it's the cow or the bull, you have to be regulated. You have to plan ahead. You have to be diligent. There was in Lithuania, I was asking one of the boys who took on the service of working with the bulls. I asked him what he was learning from the bulls, and he gave me a list of about 10 things, which I should review because I can't remember them all. But it was so wonderful. He was saying that, you have to adjust yourself to them, that they're in sattva. And he, researching, working with the bulls on the internet, he found that in olden times, there was anecdotes about how the bulls, if they smelled liquor on a man's breath, they would refuse to work with him. They would try to gore him and get out of here. They didn't want to associate with such a person. In any case, they're animals of sattva. And this is why cow protection, working with the bulls, is so important. in our culture. Because if we want to get to Sudha Sattva, we first have to come to Sattva. And Prabhupada writes, to try to get to Sudha Sattva from Rajagun, practically impossible. And we have a lot of experience of that, don't we? We have 40, almost 50 years experience of this. Where do we see that our devotees living in Rajagun in the cities are actually coming to that level of Krishna consciousness? We would all be aware of that if there were some significant examples of that by now. But we don't have so many. In any case, the point is that cow and the bull are essential for establishing this Krishna culture. And we have to understand that, and we have to adjust ourselves to that so that we can get the result. Okay, why don't we stop there?
I didn't get that last point about the devotees in the cities in passion, and we don't have an example?
Yeah, Prabhupada writes that to try to come to Sudha Sattva from Rajagun is practically impossible. Where are most of our devotees living? In the city. We live in that culture. Most of the devotees, they live in that culture. And so much so that you see, for example, in many temples, if they come to the temple, they're dressed in the clothes of that culture. They're not generally dressed in devotional clothes. I'm not saying that there aren't many wonderful advanced Vaishnavas, but my point is that we're not, what Sudha Sattva means, the transcendental platform, free from duality, right? Free from hankering and lamenting. Now that's the preliminary stage, that's the point at which we can begin our devotional service, which means pure devotional service. And so anything prior to that is mixed devotional service. We're actually not getting the result. We're not actually being able to. Why? Because our activities in Rajagun, in trying to enjoy some of our, we maintain this position as being the enjoyer, and it interferes with our ability to come to this transcendental platform. Consequently, we remain compromised by Maya. So, again, this is why we want to establish villages, so that devotees, when they come to the point of being up to here with associating with non-devotees in their job, they have somewhere else to go, to have shelter, right? If you're taking care of potatoes or tomatoes, they don't care if you're wearing tilak, but they do at the office, right? Can't go there dressed like that. So you can live your life in Krishna consciousness freely. And make rapid progress.
Thank you for this interesting class, thought provoking, where you touched upon the goal where we should come to, like, relationships among each other, like invoking a spiritual world here or organizing a spiritual world here on earth and then going back to Godhead. So sometimes I think we are in a state of hopelessness in terms of our relationships, but I was just wondering how it comes. Is it because of trust being broken? Or when I read something that if you one time become angry, it's such a big withdrawal of somebody's, of your credibility, that it's hard to understand. Yeah. Can we do about it?
The problem is that Rajagun and Tamagun, we're influenced by these gunas. Consequently, we're not steady in our activities. Why do we have so much divorce in our society? Our divorce rate is the same as that culture. Why? Because that's where our devotees live. They live in that culture. They're influenced by it. Why do we not have Our Vaishnava families have 5, 6, 8 children, all of them. If we are following the regulative principles properly, right? We're not free from sex desire. What's going on? The Catholics, my parents, they were Catholic. All the Catholics, they always had big families. Why? Because the law of the church was no contraception. Well, that's our law too. Why don't we see big families? Are we that free from sex desire? If we were, we wouldn't see this divorce rate. We're contaminated by rajagun and tamagun. And consequently, we can't make the progress. Well, and it shows up in our relationships. Right? In sattva, automatically, the influence of sattva is that I stop seeing in terms of I and I think in terms of we. I have compassion, I have empathy for others. I want to care for others naturally. This is a natural result of sattva. In rajagun, me. Our culture is rajagun. Now we have a community in Alachua, Florida. There's at least 6 millionaires there. Several of them are very wealthy. But at the same time, we have the 90% of the devotees going to the charter school there qualify for government aid because of poverty. So, why is that? Why can't we take our philosophy and apply it to our own situation so that our own devotees are not living in poverty, requiring help from the government? Anyway, my rajagun, tamagun, I and mine, lust, envy, greed, all those things. We have to become purified. This is why, you go, you stay in the village, you forget all of that stuff. It just like goes away, as long as you don't stay on the internet too much, of course. You just forget about it. And life changes. It becomes natural. It becomes more simple, and you become peaceful by being in that environment.
So if we're not peaceful in Radha, we should go less on the internet, right?
What's that?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very interesting lecture. I have a question. How can devotees be persuaded and inspired to have this idea, this goal of establishing the five communities? Because this is the essence, really.
How can the devotees be inspired to establishing these village communities? Yeah, you get inspiration by hearing from our acharya, Srila Prabhupada. Now, Prabhupada didn't speak about this so much in his purports, because his purports are meant for the general public. Where he spoke about it was in his morning walk conversations, in his room conversations, which is where he was instructing his leaders. So if you don't read those, if you don't hear them, you're not going to have access to this, and then you think it's not significant. But Hare Krishnadasi, she compiled Prabhupada's communication on this in one volume. There were supposed to be several volumes about this, but only one was published. It's broken out in the Veda base in the section of compilation from Prabhupada's words. And maybe Krishnamurti's got something else going on too that I'm not aware of. But we have to hear from Prabhupada. We have to understand. Prabhupada had a vision. He understood what this world was, and his vision was to establish the spiritual world here, to change the face of this entire world. He didn't know it was just come to start a few temples. He wanted to change the world. He wanted to establish the spiritual world here. So we have to hear from him. By hearing from him and understanding his vision, and then becoming convinced of the need for it, it goes beyond thinking just about us, right? If I'm thinking about I'm going back to Godhead, okay, well, cool. I've got a pretty nice situation here. I'm making progress. I'm going to go back to Godhead, fine. Well, what about them? What about the other 7 billion people here on the planet? Who's thinking of them? Prabhupada was thinking of them. He said, save all of them. And if you can't save all of them, save as many as you can. So how are you going to save them? Because they're not going to come and take up devotional service the way we do, but they can work for Krishna. They know work. They know how to work. That's what, you know. So we have to make an arrangement where they can just work for Krishna. Huh? We have some woofers here. Huh? They're working for Krishna. They're coming here to grow vegetables or take care of cows. That's okay. They don't know that they're doing devotional service, but they are. Huh? So we need more of that. All these people that lose their jobs and have no place, and nobody's taking care of them, the government's not looking out for them, make a place for them. Give them the opportunity to work for Krishna. And by your association, they'll gradually become more and more Krishna conscious. Sure, please.
Vlad Maharaj, in his prayers, Shunidev described how there's sages that stay in the Himalayan mountains and they don't worry about the mass people.
Say that again. What?
Vlad Maharaj in his prayers. I never read the shloka, but it's close to one that I do know. It's similar. Where he described how saintly persons would stay in the mountains.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm not talking about everybody going to the village. No, certainly we have to preach, because how are you going to get people, how are you going to help people? Sure. But both things should be done. Prabhupada, 1977, there's a conversation. And it was with Rameshwar, and Rameshwar Prabhu was trying to convince Prabhupada. He says that, you know, Our devotees, you know, we're trying to get as many people as possible to move into the temples, but they can't maintain the standard. And so Prabhupada said, therefore, I'm advocating farms. Huh? In other words, the idea is that, you know, to stay in Krishna's temple, yeah, you have to come to the standard. And if you can't follow the standard, okay, it's not that we reject you entirely. We have to give you a place, but not in the temple. So he said, so therefore the farm. And then Rameshwar continued. He said, therefore, we're trying to convince the devotees and they should live around the neighborhood and they should keep deities in their house and follow this way. And said, Prabhupada said, no, let them all go to the farm. Another point, he said, let all the grahasas, they should go to the farms. And the sannyasis and brahmacharis, they can stay in the cities and preach. In 1977, Prabhupada spoke a great deal about this, about the idea about vanashram. And you know, of course, at that time also, he said, if I'm able to, again to resume traveling, this is in August, he said, if I'm able again to resume traveling, I shall go to the farms and make them perfect. And he said, and if these farms are established, the whole world will become Krishna conscious. Do you have faith in that? So faith, like we were talking yesterday, faith means acting. It means we act with that understanding. Let's do this because we have faith in Prabhupada's words that the result will come. Okay.
I'm just wondering where, when Prabhupada said that he wanted to create a spiritual world on earth.
Oh, to bring the spiritual world here?
Yeah.
I'm saying that. I'm saying that, maybe Prabhupada said that too, but that's me saying that.
Well, he did say our temples.
Well, yeah, spiritual oasis, yeah. But I'm my concept that I'm trying to convey in this class goes beyond that, you know. To not,
it sounds to me like you're saying the whole world will become the spiritual world, but
yeah.
I have never.
Why not? Is there something wrong with that idea?
I don't see why.
Because we want to provide an environment for those people who don't realize that yet. So that it's easy for them. Maharaj wants to get a word in here.
There is a video where it's in Rafayette, in San Francisco. Prabhupada is giving a talk, and it's ending the talk, and there are so many people. And there's that I forgot the exact details, but it's talking if we hear and chant and glorify the Lord, the whole world will become like Kunta.
Yeah, the idea is that the Vaishnava, he is concerned for what's called the praja. Praja means the people in general. The Vaishnava's, his compassion, he becomes sad to see that these people, what's their future? Prabhupada said of them, he said, most of them, they're going to become animals in their next life. And so there's compassion for them, even though, like you say, you know, the spiritual kingdom's within. But for most of these people, they don't realize that. And they're on their way to hell in a lower birth next life.
It's just you say so many things, and it's like so many things in my head, and I'm trying to purify my heart and develop love for God, and I'm thinking all this stuff in my head. How is this going to help me to purify my heart?
Right. This is why I was talking.
The whole beginning of your lecture. This is my feeling about it.
This is why. I was talking about relationships, because relationships are the things that actually touch the heart. How are other people dealing with us? If somebody treats me nicely, that makes an impression that goes far, far beyond anything that they may have said, if they treat me well or if they treat me poorly. So the relationships, that's what it comes down to. The things in the head, as you say, this is meant to be transformed into action in terms of what? Relationships. How are we relating to each other? How are we relating to the planet? How are we relating to the Lord? So when we say to bring the spiritual world here, it means to bring those relationships so that we can deal with each other in the same wonderful way. In the spiritual world, there's no conflict. There's no envy.
We can't know what those relationships are if we don't purify our heart first.
Sure.
You can't just go and bring the relationships in. You have to purify your heart.
You're right.
By chanting and by worshiping the Lord, and then we can.
You're right.
Don't just say we don't have to, you know, create a society like that. You have to purify yourself.
It all goes on together, actually. Why? Because the activity. We need some activity to do. We can't just sit down and chant and purify ourselves 24 hours a day, right? Prabhupada instructed the devotees like that first. Chant 64 rounds. He said, Prabhupada, that's impossible. He said, okay, 32. 4 hours. That's impossible. Okay, minimum 16. And then what? Then you have to have some activity.
But you say build a big spiritual economy, and Krishna says, offer me a leaf.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right.
Thank you
for. No problem. I'm not laughing at you. Please. I'm sorry. I'm happy that you're speak up. Okay. Krishna says, "Offer me a leaf." Right. Okay. How many of us are going to offer a leaf? Okay. There's 7 billion people on this planet. How many devotees? No Christians that are offering a leaf. So what about them? We want, here's Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mood is that of Radharani. And what's Radharani's mood is that she wants to increase the pleasure of Krishna, her relationship with Krishna. She's happy when she sees that Krishna is happy. And what makes Krishna happy? The love that's offered from his devotees. So she wants to increase the number of his devotees. Mahaprabhu wants to increase the number of the devotees. And that was Prabhupada's mood also, to leave India, to leave the Himalayas, to take this Krishna consciousness all around the world so that more people could come and offer a leaf to Krishna. Okay? Does that make sense? Atiji. For him, okay. What we're speaking about is increasing the love. Okay, to use a term, expression from the heart, we want to increase the love. There's too much strife in this world. Thank you. Dr. Mark? Sure, there's an example we can give of that. Of Prabhupada, many times he would ask the devotees, the book distributors particularly, are you reading my books? Right? He says, these books are for you. You have to read them. You can't just go and give them to others. If you're not reading, then you're missing the point. Huh? I think this is what you mean? Huh? That in our efforts to bring others to Krishna consciousness, we're neglecting our own spiritual progress. That happens, sure. But it goes hand in hand because, again, we have to have some activity. We have to have something to do. So, so Prabhupada arranged, so many different activities for us to do in relationship to Krishna. Give me an example. Can't be impersonal. We all have our individual needs. Huh? We can't, if we try to neglect ourselves in the idea of serving others, this can't last. So we have many temple presidents who can give testament to that. So we have to take care of ourselves also. But again, both are accomplished in the same effort. It's not that we can, again, we can't just sit down and focus on ourselves, chant 64 rounds. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow, hopefully. We can get 64 rounds for one day near Jal Ekadasi, or maybe every Ekadasi, but every day, most devotees can't do. So they need some activity in service. Goshti Nandi.
Accuses God brothers a little bit of being too much in the Bhajana Nandi mood.
Yeah.
That they didn't follow the instruction of his Guru Maharaj. And with, like you explained, which is coming from Radharani, increase the wealth, as you said.
Okay, we should stop. Thank you very much. Also, let me just take this opportunity. I'm leaving today, so thank you for your association. Thank you, all the devotees, for the wonderful deity worship you do here. It's so nice to come and see the deities dressed so nicely and taken care of so nicely. And thank you for your association. I'm leaving part of my heart here. So, Hare Krishna.